This is the Senate Committee on Judiciary, meeting in room 453. We have a work session on Senate Bill 45, Senate Bill 46, Senate Bill 47, and Senate Bill 1041. We have a public hearing on Senate Bill 131, Senate Bill 405, and Senate Bill 1163. This is April 17th, 1989. Begin the agenda with Senate Bill 1163. Senator Brennan, you had an announcement?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm really pleased today to have one of my circuit court judges, newly elected and former district court judge, sitting in the back in camouflage, vacationing and watching the Senate Judiciary Committee in action, Bob Huckleberry. It's nice to have Bob here.
Welcome. Oh, he is in camouflage.
Yeah. He is.
That's okay. You didn't make it all the way to Hawaii, right? Okay, Mr. Pronemeyer with 1163. And company hits.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Dave Pronemeyer, Attorney General representing the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm accompanied by Mr. Eric Wassman, who's an assistant attorney general in the Criminal Justice Division. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here today to testify in support of a bill that will utilize existing medical technology and apply it to law enforcement to greatly assist our ability to help solve sex offenses in the state of Oregon. Senate Bill 1136 would require that each person who is convicted of a sex offense or who is currently incarcerated for a sex offense be required to submit to a blood sample. That sample can, under existing and rapidly developing technologies, be analyzed by the Oregon State Police Crime Laboratory to obtain its DNA pattern. That, as you undoubtedly know, is the genetic fingerprint by which the person's unique characteristics can be identified under this technology. That information would be held confidentially in a data bank and would serve as a reference for police officers investigating other sex crimes in the future. Passage of this bill, we believe, would greatly assist law enforcement in identifying and prosecuting sex offenders. By using this technology, it can be help us to interdict crimes that are among the most physically violent and personally intrusive that we know. Unfortunately, the abhorrence in which we hold sex offenses is not always matched by our ability to solve these crimes. The rapist who leaves behind no fingerprint nonetheless may leave behind tissue, hair, or body fluids that contain or can be analyzed to obtain this genetic print. This bill establishes the framework in which we can analyze and use that evidence. DNA testing gives us hard scientific information either to corroborate an accurate report or contradict a false one. It can be used, as it was in its very first instance in England, to vindicate the innocent as well as to convict the guilty. We know, regrettably, that sex offenders are among the most recidivous in their behavior. A 1985 study from the Oregon State Hospital Forensic Unit, which treats sex offenders, showed that 53 sex offenders in treatment during a 1.5-year period themselves admitted to having committed more than 25,000 sex offenses, including 400 rapes and 7,000 child molestations. But those offenders were involved in only 88 arrests. DNA testing, as I'm sure the committee knows, is accepted in criminal and civil cases. At least 13 states have accepted DNA evidence, and the correct number mounts every day. It may be now more than 20. California already requires that blood samples be taken from sex offenders and analyzed, and both Colorado and King County in Washington have formal DNA banks. My colleague, the Attorney General of Minnesota, Hubert Humphrey III, has introduced legislation very similar to this to do the same thing in the state of Minnesota. Passing Senate Bill 1163 will help to keep Oregon current in using modern, accurate scientific technology to identify, apprehend, prosecute crime, and let us hope, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that with the existence of this data bank over time, it will help to deter crime. I urge your favorable consideration and would be pleased to answer any questions that you or the committee may have.
Madam Chair? Senator Shoemaker.
Dave, do I understand correctly that what this is moving to do is to provide genetic fingerprints instead of the now conventional manual fingerprint, that that's its...
It would be in addition to the now existing fingerprint technology.
But ultimately, we would come to a point where we would use genetic fingerprints, probably to the exclusion of the others, because they can be used in computers and they're much more reliable and so forth.
Well, Captain Brooke of the state police is here, and he might better analyze for you what all of the ramifications are. My own sense for the matter is that we would continue to use existing fingerprint technology, which also is now susceptible of laser scanning and computer banking. In fact, we're hopeful that this legislature will pass the APHIS, the appropriations for the APHIS system, which is a space-age advance on the existing FBI techniques for using fingerprints. But because this deals with a different form of physical evidence, I suspect that in the indefinite future there will really be a need for both technologies.
Now, to take a manual fingerprint, the person doesn't need to be first convicted, does he?
No.
So that you can require a fingerprint to be, what if a person refuses to allow his fingerprint to be taken when he's booked?
Well, Mr. Wassman's a former prosecutor. Maybe he can speak to that question.
Yes.
Former and present, I should say. Excuse me.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, we have an Oregon Court of Appeals case which allows the taking of a fingerprint upon arrest. That has been considered by our courts to be a routine matter of collecting records at the time of arrest.
Now, what happens if the arrested person refuses to allow his fingerprint to be taken?
Honestly, I'm not aware of a case in which that has occurred, but I don't think that there would be anything to prevent law enforcement officers from taking those prints without the consent of the individual.
The next question is, this bill would allow a genetic fingerprint only upon conviction, if I read it correctly.
That's correct.
Would it be your intent in due course, your thought that in due course this would be relaxed so that the genetic fingerprint could be taken upon arrest routinely, just as is a manual fingerprint?
Senator Shoemaker, Madam Chair, that is certainly beyond the scope of this bill and frankly beyond my contemplation because of the different kinds of civil liberties issues that arise in the taking of a blood sample from which the genetic fingerprint is developed in DNA analysis. That is a somewhat more intrusive procedure and probably therefore one in which the legislature might want to proceed more cautiously. That's why this bill is limited to and is triggered by the actual conviction of the individual, since that otherwise involves a loss of liberty and the imposition of other significant constraints on the person. The other point is that obviously in some of the literature on the new biotechnologies, I'm sure Senator Shoemaker you're well aware, there have been studies, symposia, future-looking investigations into how the new biotechnology is to be used. And for obvious reasons, and because genetic fingerprints can be used for many kinds of things, particularly as the technology progresses, this is information that would be held confidential for law enforcement purposes and be held secure for these purposes alone.
What you're suggesting by the last point is that this would not be available to determine whether or not the person carries the HIV virus.
That's correct. For instance. That's right. There is a narrow and specifically limited set of circumstances under which the information would be given to other law enforcement entities. And the purpose is obviously to safeguard the confidentiality of the information unless there is a direct need to know related to law enforcement purposes.
So it's really getting at recidivism as it's justification, because if it's already been convicted, obviously you don't need the fingerprint, that doesn't, or your genetic print, that doesn't help you because you've already got the conviction. It obviously has to do then with someday a person is going to be out and a similar offense is going to occur, and it's a way of finding that likely suspect.
That certainly is, that's the most obvious need, but bear in mind, as I mentioned, and I did it just in passing, that the very first instance in which DNA technology was used in the effort to identify a sex crime perpetrator, they ruled out a person who in fact had confessed to the crime. So it is a way of vindicating by physical evidence those who are innocent as well as those who are guilty.
Does it have any purpose other than either innocence or guilt for a future offense?
None directly. No.
None at all. Or I suppose statistics? Or what is it? What other purpose does it have?
primarily our interest is in apprehension of the guilty, and any other purpose, at least from the standpoint of our intention in proposing this bill, is purely peripheral.
So what would those be?
Any other purposes?
Yeah. If there are other peripheral purposes, what are they?
I haven't thought of them, and that's why I can't mention them.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Shoemaker just mentioned that it's only for someone who's been convicted, and I guess my question is, why wouldn't we use that for someone who's been apprehended and accused to obtain a conviction? I mean, it's reliable. It would seem as though...
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Hill, that's always possible under a separate court order or whatever other process there would be in the individual criminal case. If there is physical evidence, whether it's blood, semen, hair sample, that could be under the proper criminal law processes, be subject to some order. But it's not to be done routinely and data banked as we propose for this information.
Okay, so right now then, this is not done routinely for someone who was arrested for a sex offense?
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, the practice currently is for the prosecuting attorney to obtain either a court order or a search warrant for the taking of a sample in the specific case based on probable cause. And we contemplate something entirely different here. After the person has been convicted, then this record would then be taken routinely without specific, it would be a court order, but it would not be the same process you go through pretrial.
Well, and probably this is a rather elaborate procedure, and I'm assuming, well, I'd like to get into the cost as well but before we're finished. And I guess what we're doing here is getting a data bank that eventually you're going to be able to go back and compare against when you do order investigative warrants to take samples from someone who has convicted. Who has been apprehended. I'm assuming that that's going to be a part of what you're doing here by way of a data bank.
That's correct.
Well, I guess my concern is that I don't know in terms of the, I realize it must be an expensive process, but given, as Dave has mentioned, that we talk about how serious sex offenses are, and the conviction of them carries a pretty strong sentence. I mean, it would seem as though if we take people's fingerprints to focus down on someone who's arrested for sexual offense, I don't know why we wouldn't do this the same way we would take their fingerprints. That's my only point.
Well, that would be a much larger sample of persons, obviously, than the one that's contemplated here. There are cost issues associated with it, and I'm sure that others might find civil libertarian concern. Okay. It was not contemplated by us as a first step. It was contemplated as a good idea because we know that sex offenses are ones that are characterized by physical evidence. Sex offenses are offenses that are characterized by recidivism, an enormous amount of it. And because the category is delimited, it is a good first step to see whether DNA banking for other criminal law purposes makes any sense. That last thought really is one that was conveyed to me by several of the leading forensic scientists in the country with whom I talked last fall when we were developing this legislation.
It's not perfect at all. It's not perfect?
Well, not the taking of the samples and all those sorts of things are not exactly, there's a lot of state of the art that's left to come in some of this.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, of course there's a lot in the state of the art in terms of identifying even more precisely how one does the genetic fingerprinting. But it is to the point where it's admissible under the so-called Frye test in many of these jurisdictions. And I will say peripherally that the Department of Justice has been using DNA tests now for several years in the course of our child support operations when we use it to establish paternity. And I can tell you that those test results are regarded as so reliable that normally the defense attorney just regards it as a laydown when the state produces a DNA sample of the child and of the putative father and shows that they match up. So, and these are vigorous advocates. So we have a high degree of confidence in it. We use it for civil law purposes and establishment of paternities now all the time.
Well, it's a
opposed this meeting.
And just one point, do defendants use this quite often for as a defense to try to show their innocence?
I would assume that if you came up with a non-matching sample, that would be defendant's exhibit number one. Prosecutors should probably walk away from that if the defense is able to show that. I think I heard the chair engage in a colloquy with Senator Hill, and the issue may be about the reliability of it. Again, you might wish to ask Captain Brooke, but if you have a good blood sample, the chances of getting a good DNA reading are great. If you just have a small blood spatter, or you have only one partial hair, or some things that are more difficult to test or difficult to pick up, then finding whether that matches the true sample that you had may be more difficult technologically, and that is expanding rapidly in the science. But if you have a good sample in bank and you take a new good sample, there's no reason why that shouldn't be dynamite.
Senator Brockman.
I can understand that there is no court order when someone is arrested to take fingerprints, right?
That's correct. Senator Brockman, no, there is not.
Okay. I know that the Attorney General, as I am, is interested in cleaning up the courts and getting them on about their business. There are several things, and I can understand why you might need a court order to be used to have this used as evidence. But after the conviction, why do you need another court order? Can't we just say that's the way you're going to do it in the future?
If I may, Senator Brockman, I wanted to ensure that this occurred, and so I thought of a mechanism to ensure that it would happen. One was a uniform requirement that in all these offenses this be ordered by the court. That would give the court some supervisory authority and in a sense would focus responsibility for making sure that it happened in all convictions of a particular type occurring in that jurisdiction.
Madam Chair, if I may. So one, it will be a blanket order that in these circumstances it will be done. You don't have to do it every time. Is that what you're saying?
The court should order it, but the way that these routine conditions of probation or conditions of sentencing are enforced presently is that sentencing forms usually contain those standard conditions in a case. This would not be a sentence that every criminal defendant would receive, and so it would take a little finessing and implementation to make sure that it was done in each particular sex offense. But to me, it was the best way of ensuring that this matter was called to the attention of the custodian of the person who was convicted that it should be done.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Springer.
Eric or Mr. Attorney General, as I'm reading the bill, I believe I understand that on page 2, for example, this information may be released upon request to support enforcement in the district attorney's office or Department of Justice for establishing a paternity. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, you are, Senator Springer.
Okay, and that's basically a civil proceeding. How does that compare with the existing laws to whether or not if the state is representing someone or private party conceivably is seeking to establish paternity, can they now go to a court and get a blood sample from someone who is the putative father in these kinds of proceedings?
Honestly, Senator, I have to tell you I don't practice in that area, and I really cannot give you an answer to that question.
Okay. We obtained Senator Springer, we obtained the samples through court order for paternity tests now.
Okay, it's been a while since I've done any of that either, so I may ask our counsel to clarify that point. Second question,
please.
If I understand Section 7, this would apply to all juveniles who fall within the definition there, who've been convicted or found to have committed a sexual offense as defined in Section 1. Basically, in juvenile court proceedings, all juveniles as opposed to a subset of juveniles who may be remanded as adults.
Senator Springer, as drafted, that's the way it would apply
to all juveniles.
All juveniles convicted of these sexual offenses.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jack?
Mr. Walsh, I should know this, and I don't. What has the Oregon Supreme Court ruled on the admissibility of these tests in a criminal context yet?
No, it has not. It has not yet worked its way even to the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
There, I believe, is a trial which should occur shortly, which will get us a trial-level determination.
So at this point, there aren't any trial court rulings either that you know of?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Shoemaker.
One other question. Does the definition of sexual offense include what we commonly call statutory rape, that is consensual sexual relations with a girl who's a minor?
Senator Brockman, yes, it does.
I'm a Shoemaker, but...
My decision for including that initially, I have to say, in initial drafts I left it out and included it later after more thought. And it was that as a result of plea negotiations or difficulties of proof, frequently what appears as the typical boyfriend-girlfriend statutory rape that we have come to assume statutory rape to be is not reflective of the offense, that very often that quote, statutory rape is very much contributing to the delinquency of a minor, as it's termed in the statute. It involves sexual exploitation of a younger person by a much more mature adult. And after reflecting upon that fact, I just chose to include it in the draft. I believe that by capturing those people convicted of contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor, you are going to be capturing true sexual offenders as opposed to simply slightly older boyfriends on a date.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have obviously a large amount of scientific and journal literature. If any member of the committee wishes further amplification of some of these issues, both on the legal side and the technological side, we'd be happy to provide
Great.
That to you or the
Thank
committee.
Thank you. Dave Burks.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sheriff Burks. I'm Sheriff of Blaine County, and I'm also representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. We think this is perhaps the most important bill that you will consider this session. We say that for the following reasons, and that is that sexual crimes are oftentimes stranger to stranger crimes and are very hard to solve. One of the frustrating things that police officers have is gaining of physical evidence. In these types of cases, there's almost always human evidence left at the scene, be it either sperm, fluids, hairs, or blood. With the technology that is now available to us, if this becomes law, it will give us a very strong tool in determining the absolute identity of all but identical twins in these types of crime, and particularly if we eventually get a database in which in the known suspect cases, we could submit this data to the state police, this evidence, have it compared, have it analyzed and compared with a known database, will give us known suspects. And so we're very supportive of this bill. We would note only one thing that we would like changed if this bill is favorable to you, and that is in Section 2 on page 3, if on line 4, it says, in essence, that any person in the physical custody of the Department of Corrections having been convicted of one of these crimes would, upon passage of this law, have the test taken. We would suggest that there are a number of these people that are serving sentences in local jails that perhaps you'd want to consider also that to include them. If you were to do that, you would just leave out the words in the physical custody of the Department of Corrections, and I believe it would accomplish that. So again, we're very supportive of this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have of me.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Steve Anderson.
Senator Cohen, Senator Hill, my name is Steve Anderson, and I signed up. I'm with the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I respectfully ask that you withdraw my name from presenting testimony, and I apologize to you. The reason I came was merely to monitor the cost, and when I reviewed the bill, I noticed on Section 3 and 4 the blanks there with respect to the sum.
Okay. So we have a fiscal impact of $715,000. Members will find that in your folders. Right there. I think that's the correct number, Senator Bradley. Isn't that right? Your good eyes better than mine.
742.
742.
First by name.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Dale Penn.
Madam Chair, my name is Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney. I'm representing the District Attorneys Association on this bill. I'll be very brief. We support this bill, and we believe the reasons detailed by the Attorney General are the real basis to request that this bill become law. It is emerging technology, which we believe will go far to assist us in protecting the innocent as well as identifying and convicting the guilty. Sex offenders are very difficult to deal with because, based upon studies that have been done, they are high recidivist offenders, and we do not really have significant treatment capabilities in a statistical manner to say that we can turn around sex offenders as a class in any large percentages. Because of that, this capability would provide protection to the public as well as to a person with a record who is innocent of the crime, and because of that we believe that would be efficient law enforcement and yet still protective of people's rights since a sample is only taken after conviction. Because of that, we would urge you to pass this into law.
Could I ask, what about the business of having it done for those who are in the jail, since that would impact local jurisdictions, and I know that Sheriff Burks thinks that's a good idea. We need to then figure out how many more samples and what the cost impact might be if we actually include the jails, and whether and who's at that point going to pay for it, whether it's the state or the local jurisdictions if they order it, and for the jail population. I'd appreciate your discussion with the rest of your compatriots out there to see what you think about that comment.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's difficult to respond to right now, only from the perspective that if there is medical personnel on duty in local correctional facilities, which normally there would be at least some period of the day, it would seem to me that those samples could be taken very easily without tremendous cost.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about taking of the samples as I am processing and
the numbers of them,
and increasing the numbers to the point where the state mm-hmm. pays. So I guess that's my concern, and I will ask the state police to come up in a minute. Senator Brenneman.
What kind of a priority are these cases usually given by a district attorney? Fairly high priority cases?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Brenneman. We're talking about primarily in this situation the usefulness of this evidence, forcible rapes, forcible sodomies, and maybe even murder cases, where you have physical evidence left behind by the offender. You do not know the offender's name. You may have a sketchy description, you may not. And this provides scientific evidence to help us pinpoint the identity.
I'm looking maybe from the aspect that although this has some fiscal impact, maybe in the long run it has the impact of saving dollars and reduced investigative time. Does it have that kind of potential?
Certainly. Senator Brenneman, when you talk about forcible rapes or forcible sodomies, typically you may involve a serial rapist. And that is the classic stranger-on-stranger situation where identity is a major problem. This impacts the identity case and gives us something to go on when the person wears a mask or blindfolds the victim, which many times happens in a stranger-on-stranger rape situation. And we don't have a description, or the victim doesn't know who this person is. This would give us a place to start.
Oh, excuse me, Senator
Brennan,
finished?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dale, in a forcible rape situation, and I'm trying to get some idea of how much this is used or maybe the potential, when there's been a forcible rape or sodomy, is it a usual procedure? Do you ever analyze semen to get this DNA information? Is that done regularly or?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Hill, what would happen now is that that is part of a regular rape examination. We will ask a doctor to take swabs. of the different body cavities that may be involved. Those sample swabs are then kept by the crime lab until we have an identified suspect that we could then take a blood sample from and then run a comparison of the blood type of the defendant with the blood type information that we develop from the seminal fluid or whatever we recover from the body of the victim. That is blood typing, and that is presently used extensively in paternity testings and support enforcement cases as well as criminal cases. However, statistically, the best that can do is it can bring you down to subgroupings, and the best you can come down to is that this defendant is with a is within a particular blood grouping that would have been consistent with the semen or the fluid that was left with the victim, but there may be thousands of people in that subclass. The thing that's important about DNA research is that it brings it down not to a subclass, but to a specific individual. This would allow us to go that next step.
I'm just trying to